Welcome to the School of Batman, a podcast where we ask academics to help Batman fight crime using their research. I'm your host, Chris George, amateur scientist and professional Batman enthusiast. In today's episode, we'll be discussing Bruce's new Batsuit. We're pleased to be joined by Lorenzo Piccinelli.
Hello, hi.
Hi, Lorenzo. Lorenzo has a PhD in music technology from De Montfort University and is currently a senior lecturer in audio experience design, the director of undergraduate studies, and leads the Human Performance and Experience, HPX, research theme with the Dyson School of Design Engineering at Imperial College London. So hi, Lorenzo. Thanks for joining us and thanks for making time to come and speak to us today. How are you doing?
I'm very, very well. Thank you. And thank you for inviting me.
Wonderful. So what we'd like to do before we dig into the bat element of the podcast is to get a bit of a feel for how you got to where you are today. What were you interested in? What were some of your choices? And a little bit about your research and what you do in your day to day.
Okay, well, let's start with that. I'm Italian, so I studied in Italy my undergraduate degree in Milan. And I then wanted to work a little bit more towards the music aspect of things. So I studied something similar to computer science. And then I decided to go to Leicester at the Montfort University, where I did my PhD. The focus of my research was 3D audio for headphones. It's called binaural audio. It's a technique that allows you to create three-dimensional soundscapes. So put sound sources around you, not just left, right, up, down, front, back, different distances, but all using a simple pair of headphones. So that was the sort of focus of my PhD, but was very much applied to the musical side of things. So I was working with the musicians that use this technology to create new compositions, new ways of interactions, and etc. I then went to France for about a year and a half in Paris, and that was very interesting because I worked at a lab called LIMSI, a CNRS, and then I worked at IRCAM in Paris. And I started looking at applications of this technology that went beyond the leisure side. Not that I don't like the leisure side, I very much like the musical and artsy side of it. But I started working with auditory displays and the blind individuals. So I did a project where we used this technology to help people with a visual impairment to navigate, to move around. And then I worked in another area which is very fascinating and is sonification, which is the idea to transform non-sound data, non-sound parameter into sound. So take some sort of stream, any stream. The simple example is when you park your car that you have the distance sensor from the car behind, you hear beep, 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 beep. That's a sort of a sonification. The distance is rendered through sound. So that was a very interesting project. I came back to the UK. I went back to the Montfort University where I worked as a lecturer. I taught music technology, music production. And then about 3.5 years ago, I moved to London at Imperial College. We started a sort of a new adventure here. We created this new school called Dyson School of Design Engineering. It's a new department of engineering. So we do design engineering, which is sort of a blend of engineering practice and design with a particular focus on innovation and all the aspects of design from the ideation at the beginning to the exploitation at the end. So within this new department, we have this research theme that is called Human Performance and Experience, HPX. I am leading the theme that has different types of research groups, labs, and people. We work in many areas from studies of impact and using this information to design new helmets, to big data and the Internet of Things, user experience, and in particular, my group works in audio. Audio from the perceptual side of things and the algorithmic and development and application side of things. So, for example, one of the biggest areas is spatial audio. We study how people perceive spatial audio, how people can localize sound sources, what are the different mechanisms, and then we use this knowledge to develop new 3D audio algorithms that can be used then in virtual reality, can be used for interfaces, auditory displays for people with visual impairment, can be used for hearing gate technologies, and etc. So we follow this whole range of things.
Well, so there's an awful lot to unpack there, so I'm probably going to try and take you right back to the start. And we talked about 3D audio. And that, I think that's quite a difficult concept to grasp if you're unfamiliar with a lot of audio production techniques, or even just if you're unfamiliar with kind of how they're rendered. So if I was listening to some music or to something on headphones, I think I would struggle to tell you if I was listening to stereo audio or 3D audio or mono audio. Can you give us some clarity to what some of those terms actually are?
Yes, you made a good example, listening to some music with headphones, but I would start actually with a standard loudspeaker, stereo loudspeaker. So you have a left speaker and a right speaker. Now, you can have sound sources, and in this case, if we talk about music listening, you can have different instruments that are located more on the right, more on the left, or in the center. I don't know, it is quite common, for example, if you have a piano and a guitar, to put them one slightly panned on the left and one on the right. By panned, I mean, yeah, simply put a little bit towards one speaker and a little bit towards the other. So instead of having everything in one single point in the middle of the speakers, you have a sort of a line of sound sources, positions between the two loudspeakers. So you have a sort of a wider stereo field. Things are a bit left and a bit right. And this is very, well, if you can compare between mono, so everything shrink in one single place, and stereo, the difference becomes very evident. Actually, one way of thinking about this, of actually experiencing this more, is if you listen to some of the recordings of the Beatles, some of their first stereo recordings, they overdid it in the sense that they put really, sometimes you have the whole guitar only on one speaker and the whole, bass or voice or other instruments only in the other speaker, which is like hard panning is something that we don't do anymore. We tend to be a little bit more careful when doing this. But some songs of the Beatles, they have really this hard panning, and you can clearly see here the sources in very different positions. So this is stereo in the sense that you can create a sense of monodimensional spatialization, left or right. You can also enhance this by adding depth in the sense that you can add the artificial reverberation. So reverberation is when you are like in a church that you say a word and you hear all the echoes. A lot of echoes form a reverb, a tail. So it becomes reverberation. You can do this artificially in a recording studio. So, and this adds a little bit of depth. Generally, sources with a lot of reverb sound a little bit more far, and with less reverb, they sound closer. But you still have a very frontal representation of the musical, of the soundscape. You have sources left, more right, a little bit of depth. Now, I'm not saying that this is wrong. This is perfectly fine, also because when you go to a concert to listen to music, you generally have something very similar. You have sources in front of you. But then, in real life, we experience sound sources all around us. We can have, we can walk on the street and have a car coming from behind us. And this can't really be reproduced accurately with a standard stereo loudspeaker system. So 3D sound is more being able to emulate what happens in reality. So having sound sources that are not just left, right, but they can also be behind you. And this is done on a consumer level, thinking about, for example, Dolby Digital, Dolby 5.1, SRS. There are many other formats that do bidimensional surround. But then we want to extend it further and also have in height. So you can have sound sources above or below you. Sometimes certain cinema can support these kind of formats that are much more complicated. But yeah, the idea is to create everything surrounding you and feeling that you are immersed in a complex sound field. Now, when you listen to headphones, it's slightly different. When you listen to a standard stereo track on headphone, the first impression is that sound sources tend to be located inside your head. Now, you're perfectly right that you don't think about this consciously. You're simply listening to music, and it's perfectly normal for you. But if you could change and flip between, for example, the standard stereo and full 3D binaural surround, you would actually hear the sound sources moving away from your head and start populating your surrounding environment, so you feel really immersed. You are very right saying that it's difficult to understand the difference between these two, and maybe now I can say a few things that we're gonna then spatialize and we're gonna hear them. So in different positions around us. So I'm now talking from in front of you, then I'm starting to move, now I'm on your left, and then now I'm on your right. Now I'm very close to your left ear whispering. So using this technique, we can really achieve all these kind of effects with a standard pair of headphones. This said, and going back to what you said before, I can't really understand too much the difference. Our hearing system adapts very, very fast. So if we hear even just a mono sound, our brain tends to basically create the soundscape by itself. So we would find it immersive, and even if it's just very simple spatially. It's similar to when you go to an old car and put in a tape cassette, which sounds very bad compared to the quality we are used to now. But after a few minutes, it's going to be fine. It's going to sound all right. Your brain is compensating for it, and the quality gets okay. Our brain adapts very fast. Then you put in a CD and you think, whoa, this is the best music I've ever heard, because it's just significantly better, and you can compare cassette, CD. So to really experience and understand what 3D sound is, and most of all what binaural audio is to being able to switch between the spatialized and the non-spatialized version.
So am I right in thinking then it's less about the delivery method and more about the recording? So an example I'm thinking of in my head is that if I was dropped into a circular set of speakers, so I'm fully surrounded by speakers, but I listen to a mono recording, that wouldn't be 3D sound in that sense. That would just be a mono recording represented all around me.
Well, if that mono recorded is played back in the same way by all speakers, and all speakers are more or less at the same distance from your head, independently on where they are, but the same distance, so the sound arrives all at the same time, ideally you would hear a mono sound. You would hear something in the middle of your head. This is an ideal scenario in free field. Actually, you're going to be in a room which is probably not going to be perfectly symmetrical. It's going to have some acoustic, it's going to influence the sound due to its acoustic features. And so it's not going to be perfectly like that. But if you are reproducing a mono source from each speaker around you, it doesn't matter how many you have, you're not really going to have an immersive sound field. Well, if you reproduce it from one speaker only and then another source from another, and then maybe move them around and pan them around speakers, maybe add some reverberation that is then reproduced from all the speakers in a slightly different way, for example, to emulate a complex asymmetric room, then in that case, you start having like a real sort of 3D impression and start feeling that you're immersed into a virtual environment. But if it's a mono source, you're not likely to have that impression.
Great, thank you very much. That was a pretty clear explanation. But I think it's probably time we move into your story and we get into some of the ideas around the story. But before we go into that story, we'd like to ask our guests to choose a Batman actor that they would like to represent their Batman in their story. So do you have one for us?
Yes, I mean, I think I've watched most, if not all, of the Batman movies of the last 20 years. And I really like Christian Bale.
It's a very popular choice, and I think for this kind of high-tech Batman story, I think a very good choice as well. Frustrated with some of the recent upgrades to the Batsuit, Bruce literally goes back to the drawing board and takes a very different approach. The heads-up display is overwhelming, and as someone who is the Knight, he needs every improvement to working in darkness he can get. Looking over some of the latest innovations from Wayne Tech in seemingly unrelated areas, the world's greatest detective begins to piece together a selection of technologies that grant seemingly superhuman sensory capabilities. How can he succeed? So in this instance, Lorenzo, these seemingly unrelated areas and technologies, you're in control. You are Wayne Tech in this instance. So how can you help Batman work in the night? How can you help him get over this very overwhelming heads-up display that was on the last iteration of the Batsuit? And what superhuman sensory capabilities might you be able to give him?
Okay, it's not an easy challenge, but let's see what we can do. Now, heads-up display are great if you think about Google goggles and HoloLens, and I'm sure the Batsuit has got something even more advanced technologically. But you always have multiple layers, so you have reality, and then you have another layer, which is the virtual side. So it could be parameters, data, could be pointers, could be virtual images or something else. And you always have this distinction, real and virtual. With sound, actually, we can do better. For many reasons, one of which is generally sound is a little bit simpler than video in terms of reproduction and the technology behind it. But with sound, we can really blend virtual and real. And technically, we could create sound sources that are virtual but are undistinguishable from real. Why do I say this? Is because you could really create a sort of an augmented system. At the moment, we talk a lot about augmented reality, so blending virtual and real. And with sound, you can really achieve something where you blend perfectly the virtual and the real. When you have a head-mounted display, so a heads-up display that displays some information about, for example, data, location of things, parameters, temperature, humidity, or any other thing that Batman might need to know, things can become a bit overwhelming. If we go back to the idea of the parking that we discussed before, I am parking my car, my hands are on the drive, on the steering wheel or on the gears, my feet are occupied on the pedals, my sight is on the mirrors, everything is overloaded. So what do I use to get information about how far I'm from the car behind? I use sound. It works perfectly. It is very clear, very immediate, not need to explanation or learning of steep learning curve, and you know how far you are from the car behind. So the idea is, can we augment Batman's suit in order to use effectively all the different sensory modalities that are available, which is not just sight, is sound or also vibrotactile, like it's yet the tactile sense and etc. to convey information. So could we use an augmented sound display, an augmented auditory display that can allow Batman, for example, to identify sound sources in the dark or identify sources that are not sound, obstacles or things. We all know that bats, for example, use echolocation. So what they do is they continuously reproduce ultrasound that then get reflected, and their hearing system can actually detect ultrasound. And thanks to the high directivity of ultrasound, they can then analyze the sound field around them, the ultrasound field around them, and detect obstacles, detect actually very tiny objects, and detect their movement and etc. Now, humans do not perceive ultrasound. We can hear frequencies up to 20,000 hertz. But why can't we do something similar in terms of augmented our hearing system? So why can't we use our current system within our frequency range, but to convey also information, additional information about where sources are? So the research that I do and that we do here in the team in terms of 3D audio could be used to create virtual soundscapes that can then represent an enhanced version of reality. So if an obstacle is present in a given position, let's say behind, so Batman doesn't actually see it, can't see it, but it's relevant to know that an obstacle is there, then information about that can be reproduced through sound while he's doing something else. So without having to overload, for example, his sensory abilities or his sight. So the idea is to further enhance its, for example, environmental awareness using sound and auditory displays. This could be, I think, something very interesting. There are actually people with visual impairment that are known to have similar abilities to do echolocations, like, for example, reproduce clicks and listen to reflections on the environment and gather information about the surrounding environment. This is something that technically also people with a normal vision can do. I mean, it's something that the hearing system is exactly the same. The way we process the sound is slightly different, though. So the idea is to use exactly technology, augmented reality, 3D audio, and then sensors all around the Batsuit to help Batman be more aware of the surrounding environment using also sound and not just the visual side of things. And I think this could be something very, very interesting and potentially very powerful. Also because whatever comes from the sound is audible only from by Batman, whatever you augment is audible only by Batman. And if you use some clever reproduction system, we don't actually need Batman to have a large pair of headphones on his ears, which would be slightly problematic, for example. But we can use systems with like tiny loudspeakers that are located in the ear canal, but do not occlude the ear canal. So Batman can still hear a normal environment, the normal sound around him, and then hear the augmented version in a very, very blended way. And I think this could be very interesting and powerful.
Okay, so I'm going to take you back to some of the early bits that we talked about there, and something that I've actually got some experience in. I drive a very big car and I use the parking sensors like you were talking about. And as you were talking, it really got me thinking about this idea of using sound as a way of being aware of what's going on around you. So if I was just walking down the street and I heard a big clang from behind me, I'd be able to recognize that it was behind me, but I wouldn't be able to tell you even remotely close to how near or how far away that sound was. But when I'm parking my car and I'm listening to my beeps, I'm not consciously saying, well, that's 4 meters away, that's 3 meters away, but there's something going on in my brain that enables me to almost feel the distance based on the sound, because I've learned what that sound represents. So what exactly is going on there? It's like some kind of sensory substitution or an additional sense, or somehow I'm unconsciously converting that sound into a representation of my world around me. What's happening?
Well, that is a very interesting example. Again, this one of the car. Obviously, let's say the first time that I hear that I use this system, I can kind of intuitively guess that I hear this beeping noise. The more frequent the beeps become, the closer it is. And then I set my target to the continuous beep, beep, that's when I need to stop. And that's relatively simple to understand. But you're right that after using the system for a while, you start sort of visualizing the distance, even though it is not really something that comes to you as a visual stimulus, but it comes to you as an auditory one. And this happens through training. I mean, simply you have a multimodal experience because you are using multiple sensory abilities to do a complex task, which is parking a car. Now, the first time you use it, you just hear the sound and you don't really know how to link frequency of repetition of the stimulus with distance. But then you start getting some trial and error situations. You start looking at how far the car is from behind from the mirror. So you start mapping the auditory stimulus with the visual one. And by doing this a certain amount of time, and I believe you park your car possibly at least twice a day, and by doing this a lot of times, your mapping allows you to start using only one modality, for example, sound, and just ignore the other, or at least represent it in your head, even though it doesn't come to you as a visual stimulus. So the sound at that point becomes what gives you the information of the distance between your car and the one behind, and is received as sound, but is also interpreted as something that is typically visual, which is thinking about how far is the car. So this mapping happens with learning and with practice and with multimodal interaction. So using different stimuli that are coherent one with the other. And so with time, you just learn how to use this very effectively. And it's a very interesting process. The car parking is very simple, but we have many other examples on how this works. For example, for tennis players, to learn how to hit the ball with the racket. There are different ways of doing it, and sometimes there is a wrong or a right way. The ball can hit the middle of the racket and have a perfect shot, or the ball can hit the body of the racket and the metal and have a wrong shot. Now, this happens so fast that you can't really see it, but you can hear it. The sound that the ball makes when it hits the racket, or it hits the middle, or it hits well, or it hits wrong, is very clear. And you use the sound to train. So at the beginning, you have no idea what the sound means. By using it, by learning how to play tennis, you learn that how you associate the sound with a wrong hit, for example, the good sound with a good hit and the wrong sound with a wrong hit. And you start using the sound as information about how your ball hit the racket, which is typically something that you would gather through sight, but in this case, you gather it through sound.
I mean, a couple of incredible bits there. I'm going to go back to the first bit. I'm very interested in just trying to explore how Batman could use this in an applied way. So let's say he's skulking through a warehouse, some footsteps go on behind him. Am I right in thinking that this technology, there would be some kind of external microphones that hear those footsteps and then would reinterpret that sound in a way like, very crudely speaking, the parking sensors work, to give him the spatial awareness of where those footsteps are? Or is it more of a direct throughput in that by hearing the footsteps, he would somehow learn that they are 4 meters away at 65 degree angle to his back? Like, what would be going on there? Is there translation of sound, or is it like I said, the microphone's picking it up and then doing it in a new way, or is it learning somehow?
I think it could be both. It could be anything. I'm just thinking, well, first, to detect that there is a sound behind Batman at a certain distance, you would need an array of microphones, which nowadays with MEMS technologies and a few other things, you can really create, they're very cheap, these microphones, and you can really have arrays of microphones around a suit, around the a helmet or etc. that help you detecting, for example, the arrival, the direction of a sound source. They use technology such as beamforming and other similar things. So you could scan around and actually know where the sound is, and with a certain precision know also the distance and where it's moving towards. And you can do that with higher precision than we could ever do with our normal ears. Well, what happens at that point is that you can decide, do you want, for example, do we want Batman to hear a sort of a realistic but enhanced sound fill? So, for example, amplifying those sounds that are moving towards us, and maybe not those ones that are moving away and that are irrelevant, because at the same time you might have an ambulance passing outside on the road and you don't really care to listen to that much. So it could be a sort of a zooming device that can focus on the sounds surrounding that are interpreted as being, let's say, dangerous. And it could then reproduce them to the Batman as an enhanced version of that. So, for example, instead of just hearing someone walking at a certain distance, you could hear them, use it as sort of an enhanced spatialization so that it's much more clear where the sound source is coming from, enhance also the distance perception, but it could also be done using some sonification. So adding some artificial sounds that can give information, for example, about the distance. Typically, we are not very good. Our auditory system is not particularly good in detecting the distance of a sound source. We are rather good in knowing where the source is left and right. We're actually very precise in doing that. A little bit less good front and back or up, down, but not very good in distance. So what you could do is you could add something like the sensor parking and add an additional sound that can give information about the distance. And this doesn't need to be like the sensor, like a beeping noise. That's very, let's say, lo-fi. It works very well because it's very immediate, doesn't require learning, is very understandable, but we can do much better than that. So you could start devising specific sounds that with training can be interpreted as, for example, distance. So you could really identify, Batman could really identify that there is a source at a given distance and that person is coming towards him at a certain speed. So all these can be transformed into sound, delivered as sound, as a sort of a enhanced soundscape plus some sonification. And through training, Batman can learn how to interpret this data immediately without even consciously process them. Which is what we do every day. I mean, when we hear a sound source on our left, what we are hearing is, well, the sound is slightly louder in our left ear and quieter in our right ear. And then it arrives first in our left ear and then in our right ear. We don't think about this consciously. We simply hear a sound on the left. So we could retrain our auditory system to listen to an enhanced soundscape that can be created by the bat suit and use this enhanced soundscape to convey even more information about the location of sound sources, their distance, whether they're dangerous or not, or etc. So it is actually very fascinating and potentially very powerful. And what is actually very interesting about this whole concept also of virtual reality and augmented reality is that we can actually allow Batman to train to use all these stimuli in a virtual reality environment instead of having to train in real life. So it doesn't need to go into 10 warehouses and then listen to the steps of someone and then probably being punched a few times before he realizes that that person is there. You can train in the same scenario using virtual reality. So you can emulate different scenarios, different situations, and then with immersive audio and immersive video and possibly also some tactile sort of feedback, you can emulate the same conditions and then try to adapt, so create a sort of a sonification and 3D sound rendering mode for the Batsuit and for Batman that can actually be most suited for specific scenarios or more suited for Batman. You can train Batman to that.
So these virtual reality simulations, is that something you use in reality now for other purposes other than, I assume you don't actually train Batman, and if you do, you don't have to say this on the podcast, but are there any other applications for it?
You're right. We tend to have a lot of confidential information about the superheroes of the train here, but and I'm not going to talk about those. But we have just finished an interesting project. It was called 3D Tune In. And we use actually virtual reality, mainly the audio side of virtual reality, but also the visual, to train hearing aid users into using their hearing aid. And this is somehow related to what we were saying. Well, hearing aids actually are not anymore as they were 30 years ago. 30 years ago, hearing aids were mainly devices that were amplifying those sounds that you couldn't hear. So I measure your hearing sensitivity, you can't hear certain sounds, and then I amplify those, more or less. This is what an old analog hearing aid was doing. Nowadays, a hearing aid is a very tiny device that contains a computer. I mean, you have a microphone, a loudspeaker, actually probably multiple microphones. You have a RAM, you have a digital to analog, analog to digital converters. You have a processor, and you have different algorithms. So hearing aids can do a lot of things, not just to amplify the sounds that you can't hear, but also to reduce background noise, to react differently to sounds that come from different directions. It can also adapt to the environment. There are now hearing aids with artificial intelligence algorithms that learn from the surrounding environment and load the right setting. The problem is that all these settings are, all these technologies can be very difficult to use. So the result is that many hearing impaired individuals tend to use their hearing aid at a basic level without exploiting fully all these additional functionalities. So what we did with this project, we created several video games and virtual reality applications to help people using hearing aids better. And each video game was targeted to a different side of the population. For example, one for children, one for the more adult and elderly part of the population. We had one specifically for music listeners, and they all are based on simulating virtual reality scenarios. So simulating real life scenarios like a restaurant, a street, and using these to help people calibrating their hearing aid optimally for that scenario and learn how to set certain parameters for that scenario and how certain parameters for that scene don't work in another scene. So the concept is really to use virtual reality as a training environment. And we use gamification in the sense that we transform some of these procedures into video games in order to improve engagement. For example, for children, it works very well if you transform something into a game and they tend to want to play more and it tends to be more effective. So this is an example on how we use virtual reality to train someone doing something specific and how we then hope that the training they acquired in virtual reality is then transferred in real life use. And this can very easily be applied to Batman. If you learn how to do certain things, if you learn, for example, how to gather information from this new sensory substitution bat suit in virtual reality, then you are more likely to use it more successfully in real life. And then in real life, anyway, you can use augmented reality, which is again a blend between the virtual and the real. And this augmented reality can guide you towards using it even better up to the moment in which you are proficient, and then it can be used to its full potential.
And so I want to go back to echolocation and vibrotactile feedback that you were mentioning. So I think before we start, could you just define what vibrotactile feedback means?
I mean, some sort of a device that can reproduce a vibration and you feeling it through your tactile system.
So would that be something that you kind of wear and it vibrates in different ways, different places, that kind of thing?
Could be. I mean, the simplest way of seeing this is just the vibration of your mobile phone. Actually, when your mobile phone vibrates, you feel it with your fingers if it's in your hand, or with your trousers if it's in your trousers. You also hear it. So in that case, is both is sort of a multimodal because you hear the vibration. But vibrotactile is actually feeling a vibration through your skin.
So one of the things that's been really interesting to me with doing the podcast is this idea of how people's realities are constructed from their senses and how things are maybe a little bit more connected than you might think, and how other senses can contribute towards your sense of vision. And this idea of echolocation and vibrotactile feedback, we've talked about how he can improve his experience of his surroundings with sound coming in. But could we then use, and could people's brains start to learn, if you have some kind of facsimile of echolocation with sending sound out, could he build up a visual picture of his surroundings if he was working in the dark, for example? Any experiences around that?
Well, echolocation, I mentioned it referring it to what bats do. And I think it's an interesting concept when you think about bats being able to navigate in a completely dark environment, fly actually very fast, and still being able to detect obstacles and actually find targets. Like I think they hunt using echolocation, using only sound. And if you talk to someone and say, well, it's completely dark and they use only sound and they can detect a very small fly just flying around and they can't find it and eat it, you think, well, that's impossible. How can they do it without sight, without light? Well, this is just because we are very biased. We tend to use vision to do most of the things that involve navigation, movement, and directional information, fronted directional information. We use sight. So we are used to have to rely only to sight. But different animals use different things. And actually sound, in particular ultrasound, could be very useful to do that. So if you are an individual with a visual impairment, possibly severe visual impairment, you are maybe blind, well, in that case, you don't have vision, so you can't rely on that, and you need to learn to gather information about the surrounding environment using other modalities. And in this case, sound and echolocation is one of those. I mentioned before that our hearing system is the same, and it's true, the hearing system of a blind person is exactly the same as the hearing system of a sighted person. If we're talking about the hardware, so the actual physiological side, the peripheral hearing system. But then the way the brain analyzes this information is different because blind individuals don't need to use sound only as a sort of a additional sensory modality for navigation, but as the main sensory modality for navigation. So they learn to analyze things that we actually normally don't hear. We don't hear consciously, or actually we don't analyze. So I give you an example. If I am in a room, in a church, for example, my priority when I hear a sound is to know where this sound is coming from. I don't need from my auditory system to gather information about the, for example, the architectural features of the room, because I can see it. I can see that it's a church. I can see that it's large. I'm much better with my vision to estimate distance of a wall than with my auditory system. But a blind person can't do that. So they need to use the auditory system to gather also information about the environment, the distance of the walls, and etc. So this is something that some of them train to do. I'm now in the middle of the room. If I do this, I can't really hear where the walls are. I can see them, but I can't hear them. A blind person that is trained in echolocation can definitely do that. So it is an ability that we can train to. We generally don't do it because we don't need it. But in situations where people that are a bit less normal, like for example, Batman, people that have a different lifestyle, let's say, in situations where they might find themselves like in complete darkness, but with the need to identify not only sound sources, but also architectural features like a step, an obstacle, a wall, or etc. In those situations, it could be very useful to be able to do echolocation. So in that case, I think it will be excellent for Batman to train into this ability and use technology to A, train in a virtual reality environment, potentially, which is very good, but also to enhance this. So to enhance the ability and the precision of our auditory system using sensors, as we mentioned, microphones around the head, on the helmet, or around the suit, and to then use these enhanced perceptions, enhanced analysis, thanks to all this kind of gadgets around the body, to deliver some enhanced soundscapes. And by training into doing echolocation and by training into using this additional information, you could have a very much enhanced and better perception of a surrounding sound field in critical and extreme conditions like the one where Batman could be immersed to. You mentioned vibrotactile. Yes, vibrotactile is something that you could definitely add to this. So you could create a much more, let's say, multimodal experience. Up to now, I'd say that Batman has mainly used sight to do his things, to do his fights, to do his, to do everything mainly. But then if we start unloading the sight part of things, the visual part of things, by using it together with some enhanced sound for example, environmental awareness, but also some vibrotactile feedback. So in this case, if you hear a sound source, I mean, if the systems on the helmet or on the batsuit detect something, a person approaching on a certain location, and they could detect this using sound or using infrared light or using other things, then they could deliver it using enhanced sound, but also using vibrotactile. So on the suit, you could have some simple vibrotactile actuator that can warn Batman, giving directional information or distance information about where obstacle sound sources are. They can maybe also be used to connect him to other people or in other environments that are fighting with him at the same time, or to deliver any kind of additional information at the same time, relying on multisensory interaction.
So we mentioned earlier about how tennis players can start to listen to the sound of how the ball connects with their racket to improve their performance, and how they can learn to do this over the time as they're learning to play the game. Can we apply any of those principles to Batman? Can we use how sound reacts differently to different experiences to help him train and learn maybe how to perform better or detective better or anything like that?
Yes, I think we use many times the example of the car and the parking, and I think we can go back to that even now. When you're driving, you use a lot information. I mean, if you want to gather information about how your engine is running, you use a lot of sound for that. So you use sound, for example, to know when you need to change a gear. With older cars that were obviously more noisy, you use sound a lot. I've seen mechanics using sound to tune carburetors. So sound is very important. You notice that your car engine is not running properly when it starts making a weird sound. This is very typical. So we use sound to gather information about the mechanical soundness of a device that could be the engine. And similarly, sound is used to, for example, in manufacturing processes. There are some manufacturing processes where they use sound to verify whether whatever they are created is immune from cracks, for example. You can use sound to detect cracks in walls without having to take down the whole wall. And so you could potentially use sound in a similar way for the Batman. So you could use sound and acoustic feedback for Batman to be aware of the status, for example, of his suit. If the helmet is cracked, if there are problems with the suit in different positions, so you could have sound sensors, sort of microphone, tactile microphone, piezoelectric microphone around the body, around the bat suit to detect if an impact has damaged the suit, for example, if there is a problem in some positions and some parts. And actually when he's having, for example, a fight, sound sensors on the suit that then deliver some sound information to the auditory system can give information about how badly he has been hit, what damage the hit produced, but can also give information to Batman himself to understand how well he hit somebody else. So I am not an expert puncher, but I believe that if you punch someone or something, the sound that your punch makes is going to give you a lot of information on how well you punch that person. So, or that person or that thing. So if you punch somebody well, I would expect to hear a nice, a sound like tock, something very like full in terms of frequency. While if you punch somebody or something a little bit in the wrong way, you might hear a slightly different sound. And you can train yourself to analyze this sound and to learn from the sound how well you perform a certain action. In this case, it's punching, could be kicking, could be even just running. So the idea of having a bat suit that has got a lot of sound, a lot of vibration sensors around the body, the suit and the helmet and etc., and then have a system that collects all this information and delivers them to the Batman to get information about the status, how well of the suit, how well it performs certain action. I think this could definitely be a further enhancement.
That's it for today. Thanks to Lorenzo for joining us.
Well, thank you very much again for inviting me. It was very, very interesting, and I have to say very unusual for me to do this kind of discussions. Very exciting indeed.
You can find out more about Lorenzo's research at the Human Performance and Experience Lab link in the description of this podcast. If you'd like to be a future guest on the podcast, please email us at info@figshare.com. And you can find us on Twitter at School of Batman.